This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, feels like it's been a little while.
You know, it feels like it's been a very, very long time, John. I know last time you and I had got together for one of these podcasts, you had really just finished your move across the U.S. to Durham, North Carolina. And yeah. I took Thursday and Friday of last week, and I helped my mom and dad move out to Columbus, Ohio from Dayton.
So much
of a shorter move than yours, but I was still doing that for 2 days, so I was definitely getting to work out, had some soreness to work through. But yeah, they're here now in Columbus. So, but yeah, long story short, I feel like you and I spent some time since we were able to get back together on this.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of traveling recently, you know, after the whole move got settled in. But man, I'm hoping that for at least the next few weeks here, should have a pretty stable and consistent schedule, and you and I can get our weekly podcast going again.
Absolutely, man, absolutely.
Although I will say, and we can certainly, you know, dive into this a little bit more later, I was looking ahead a few weeks here, and
yeah.
I'm not loving what I'm seeing this summer, which is odd because I think this is probably going to be the highest grossing movie year of all time. But man, outside of a few kind of, you know, trickling in here and there, it might be kind of a weak box office ever since Avengers dropped. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, that's what the data is indicating. You know, I know you mentioned it might be the highest box office. I still think, we're a little behind compared to last year, but with the strength of the Avengers, and I know The Lion King is going to bring in a hell of a lot of money, and you know, maybe one or two movies here or there, but I think you're right. I think there are some smaller movies that I do have interest in, but there's nothing like massively big that really catches my mind or my eye, immediately, maybe till like July. And then even then, it's kind of like one movie per every couple of weeks. There's some smaller stuff I got interest in, but maybe not anything like kind of tentpole blockbustery.
Yeah, there's a few horror films coming out this summer and fall that I think, you know, have the potential to put up some pretty serious, you know, possibly even surprisingly large numbers.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm very curious to see how this summer winds up going.
You and me both, man. You and me both.
Yeah, well, without further ado, we can go ahead and jump into some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
I guess first one that's kind of troubling to me on a personal level, because I'm such a fan of the James Bond franchise, is this, you know, ever, you know, troubled production has faced a few more bumps in the road recently. The most recent one that you and I were talking about was what was supposed to be a controlled explosion. Was it on the Pinewood set in England?
Yep. It was on the Pinewood Studios.
Yeah, well, it seemed to turn into kind of a uncontrolled explosion, and even one of the crew members was injured in the explosion, and I mean, that's never a good sign by any stretch. I haven't read too much about it, but whenever people on set are getting hurt, it's not exactly a great sign.
Yeah, you know, I guess first and foremost, it doesn't seem like anyone got killed, so that's a very,
yeah,
very good
Christ.
Thing. And whenever you kind of hear about some of these accidents, you know, it just kind of puts things into perspective just a little, because, you know, I know when I watch movies, you know, sometimes, at least I forget that there's a whole bunch of work that goes into staging these elaborate set pieces and whatnot, and all this stuff kind of has to be wired. I mean, you've got the actors, it's one thing, you have the directors, but then you've got like the engineers and all the set people, you know, constructing all this stuff. So, first and foremost, everyone sounds like they're safe outside of a few minor injuries, but, you know, I think since they announced a new director and, you know, Cary Fukunaga, it seems like it's been nothing but bad news for this Bond 25. And I think you have to throw out the C word at this point, man. I think we have to say this movie feels kind of cursed for whatever reason. Geez. Like, you know, we're still ways away from it being obviously released. We haven't seen a trailer or anything, but they had to step down or tamp down on some shooting because Daniel Craig, I think, injured his ankle, and that had to shut that down for a couple weeks. And, you know, it just, you hear about all the rewrites and everyone not being on the same page. I've got very, very, very low expectations right now, you know, for what this movie's going to look like. And maybe that'll change, you know, once a trailer drops. I'm not a huge fan of trailers, but my interest is definitely piqued to see what this will look like, at least on a small level. But, yeah, man, it seems like it's been nothing but bad news for this movie over the last really half a year now.
Man, to be honest with you, I've had a pretty bad taste in my mouth about the franchise ever since Daniel Craig said he'd rather slit his wrists than come back and do another movie, which he said that right before Spectre aired. So I went into Spectre concerned, and then I didn't like Spectre, and then there's been all this trouble with Bond 25, director changeover, Craig getting injured. It's just... yeah, it's cursed, man. It's not a good feeling. You hate when you hear that rewrites are going on constantly. I don't know. What I was hoping was going to be, you know, a nice send off and swan song for Daniel Craig is looking to be the complete opposite.
Yeah. At this point, I mean, if it's better than the Quantum of Solace, I will probably take that just from all the stuff that we hear and all the, you know, bad news and stuff. But you kind of hit it right on the head with, you know, him saying that he'd slit his wrist opposed to playing Bond again. And then obviously we have the whole will he, won't he for a little while. And they threw the book at him. And obviously he came back, and it's a lot of money to refuse. But, you know, when you do that, it's clear that, you know, the passion and the drive and desire to want to do this isn't really there. So I don't think that we're going to get a really good Craig performance. Will probably be serviceable, but, you know, I just feel like it's very let's get us to the end here and then we'll figure out what we'll do after 25.
Yeah, I feel like they should have brought some fresh blood into it. You know, you saw how well that worked out. You know, I was a huge Pierce Brosnan fan when he didn't come back and the relatively unknown Craig at the time was announced. I wasn't feeling great about it, and then he pumped out one of the best, you know, not only Bond movies, one of my favorite movies in Casino Royale. So, I don't know. I'll be very, very curious to see what the first trailer looks like, just to get a feel for, you know, the production.
Yeah. Right.
Well, something else you just mentioned to me is apparently the release date of the Godzilla vs. Kong movie got bumped back about 6 months next year.
Yep. So I think it's no surprise. Everyone knows that these movies, Kong Skull Island, the Godzilla movies, have kind of been leading to some type of Godzilla versus Kong team up in some way, shape, or form. And Godzilla versus Kong has been set for 2020. I think the initial date they had was April, but now they want to move that back to December just to, I think, maybe reevaluate certain things. I know the first 2 weeks of this movie have been a little underwhelming as far as box office goes. So I do think maybe, I don't know if that means rewrites or the term I heard was just, you know, we want to make sure we're putting out the best product out there. And if that's what it is, then it's probably best that they do, you know, pause it for later in the year. I know we're kind of get to Godzilla a little bit. I wasn't the biggest fan of it. I'll just leave it at that. But we'll get to that as we bring it up a little later.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's not usually a great sign when they push back a release date. And the first Godzilla movie put up like $90 million in its opening weekend. I want to say this one did 50 or 60. And I mean, this was a culmination of bringing out all these monsters of the universe. So I think people were expecting a pretty big spectacle and some pretty large numbers. So yeah, I would imagine they've got some pretty big decisions in front of them, I don't know if they would wind up canceling it at this point or just pushing it back even further, but yeah, I don't think it was the release that they were expecting at all. And, well, I think the last piece of news we had then was actually kind of surprising to both of us. One is they set a release date for the Uncharted film, correct?
That's right. Yep. They set a release date, and it looks like they're aiming for December 2020, which is interesting because I think it'll be the first December where there won't be any Star Wars movies, and I think I'm forgetting about one other big IP that sometimes drops in December, but for the time being, they're going to have that slot generally unchallenged. I mean, there will be some other movies they'll have to go up against, but none like the big ones like your Star Wars. But yeah, I was surprised for two reasons. One being, I knew we were kind of getting it, but I didn't know that it was so close. And two, I had no idea actually that they had casted Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. And I do have some thoughts on that, but I want to hear maybe yours first.
My thought is he's too young.
We're on the same wavelength. I think he's way too young for Nathan Drake.
He plays a very convincing high schooler, and yep. You know, I've played three of the Uncharted video games. I look at Drake as somebody in his like late 30s or 40s even.
Yeah. You know, they hit it on the nail, Sony with Spider-Man, casting awesome there. But yeah, when I think Nathan Drake, you know, I think kind of the scruffiness, a little bit of a slight asshole, but he's lovable. I don't get that vibe from Tom Holland. I know the thing a lot of people want to see, a lot of fans, was, you know, maybe casting like Nathan Fillion. He's done some stuff from Castle, and I could kind of see that resemblance a little bit. Or just Nolan North himself, though he's not necessarily a household name, so you might have to go someplace else. But I'm just not feeling, you know, Tom Holland. I think he's way too young for the type of character that Nathan Drake is in those Uncharted games.
Did you ever see the Firefly series?
I did not.
Okay, and that was led by Fillion, and I'm imagining that's what got a lot of, you know, fans behind him for the Uncharted series, is because it's a pretty similar character, really, sure. Except it's, you know, more of like space-based. But I think Fillion even went so far as to make kind of like a short, I don't know if it's like a for YouTube or just like a little fan film, but him and Stephen Lang, that was the villain in Avatar.
Yeah,
so they made it together. It's like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. You can find it on YouTube, and they're playing, you know, Drake and his cohort. So
I'm looking at the screenshot of that right now, kind of like before you play the movie, since we're obviously online. But yeah, I mean, just looking at the screen cap, I mean, he looks like Nathan Drake. I just feel like, you know, him plus a few other people, I would feel a lot more stronger about the movie. And maybe, you know, Tom Holland surprises me, but I do think, you know, sometimes you gotta kind of find the right person age-wise for these type of movies, and especially if you play through these three games, you know that, you know, Nathan Drake, he's interesting guy, but he's not like a spry youngster. He's been through a lot. So when I was reading through that news, one thing was I didn't know we were getting it 2020 in December, but two, I had no idea that Holland was cast, and I guess I'll just have to see actual images, but I don't know if I'll be able to get that kind of that young buck image out of my head.
Yeah, I think they're going for I guess they're banking on the fact that Holland's, you know, a pretty big household name right now. And I guess I would say Fillion isn't exactly on that same level just because he doesn't have a giant franchise behind him. But, I mean, he's definitely a better fit. And at the very least, I thought it'd be like Chris Pratt we would see in this role.
Yeah.
Who's probably 10 or 15 years at least older than Holland. So I'm pretty shocked.
I am too. I'm very, very shocked. I'm interested. Maybe it'll be the movie that could change the general curse of video game movies, but I do think they could have casted a much more kind of realistic looking Nathan Drake for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you, man. So we'll see. They got to start filming it relatively quickly if it's going to be released at the end of next year. So I'm sure we'll be getting some set pictures before long.
Yep.
All right. With that, we'll go ahead and wrap up the real news, and we'll pause for a few moments to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
Hi, I'm Nick from the Nick and Vince Podcast. I want to let you know about a new podcast I'm launching next month. It's called the St. Paul Filmcast, where each week, me and my co-host Dan will pick one classical film to review. We'll be discussing new films, modern films, new releases, and other aspects film-related. You'll find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can already find our podcast on Twitter at St. Paul Filmcast and Instagram. I hope you give us a listen. Thank you very much. And I can't save
you. Rising from the depths of a state called Michigan, two inebriated dorks prepare their plan for intergalactic domination, mixing their extensive knowledge of geek culture with their insatiable thirst for alcohol. These two man-children bring you a show like you've never heard before. They will tell you tales from faraway lands and have you questioning their taste in beer. But make no mistake, friend, for the best coverage of your favorite comics, films, and TV shows, there's no better source for you to get your fix. So listen up, strap in, and prepare yourself as Jake and Tom conquer the world.
All right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap with John Bonham and Mark Jackson. Mark, let's go ahead and do the recap of this past weekend, June 7th through 9th. But before we do, let's start with Ma, a movie that came out last weekend, which you got to see, but you know we obviously didn't get to do a podcast about it. So, what were your thoughts? I know this is one that you and I were both, you know, relatively excited about. I thought the trailer looked pretty interesting, and it might be kind of a, you know, a one of those smaller budget horror, you know, thriller films that winds up being one of the bigger surprises of the year. But I certainly didn't read any positive reviews of it, so I was pretty curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'll just recap a little bit about Ma, you know, story-wise. So Ma takes place in present day. Basically, a young daughter, her name's Maggie. She moves across country from California to back to her mom's hometown in Ohio, which I thought was cool. and they start to go to – she goes to a new school. She meets new friends, etc. She does basic high school stuff that normal high schoolers do. They like to get drunk from time to time, but obviously they can't buy alcohol. Everyone's seen that scene in the trailer. They go and they ask Octavia Spencer's character, whose name is, I think it's Sue Ellen, Sue Ann. Yeah, there we go, Sue Ann. They ask her, you know, she relents. They buy alcohol. They have a good time. She eventually starts hanging out there more and more. She gives them a place to drink in peace. But slowly but surely, they start to figure out more and more that, you know, Ma's not everything she seems. There's very much some past issues that make Ma kind of who she is. But long story short, I think people kind of know me at least a little bit. I kind of like some of these movies from time to time, as trashy as they may be. This is very much a psycho stalker movie. Generally, I had a pretty good time with it. I'm probably a little bit more on the positive end than most reviews have been, but I think it's right around like, maybe, I haven't looked at Rotten Tomatoes. You can look at this while I bring it up. But I think it's somewhere between like 45 and 60%. So it's not necessarily terrible, but it's not, you know, obviously amazing either. There's some things I liked about it. I liked Octavia Spencer. I thought she gave a heck of a good performance. And it surprised me a little bit on just how emotional it was. It wasn't like a tearjerk or anything, but just to draw like a very, very... quick parallel or quick similarity. You saw The Gift, right, a couple years ago?
Yeah, I did.
That was also a Blumhouse production, and this movie kind of is like a poor man's Gift a little bit. It touches on some like similar themes, and I don't want to spoil anything, but there's very much an idea of like past trauma that surprised me a little bit. I thought some of the direction at times was good. Other times I felt like it was very... I don't know, corny, kind of just awkward how they put certain things together from the past. But it does get progressively crazier, definitely in the final act. I think the pacing was off a little bit from time to time. The final act does get very bonkers, and that's when it feels like super, super horror-y. But I wish maybe they would have had a better build to it overall. But long story short, I would kind of recommend it for people like me who generally like these movies, who like Octavia Spencer. She definitely goes for it. You can tell she had a great time in this movie. And if you see any of her marketing, she's pretty happy with it. So I think ultimately you just kind of take this movie as a quick, you know, I think it's 90, 91 minute diversion. And there's a few laughs. There's a few thrills here and there. It's nothing amazing. But yeah, I would say if I had to compare it to one movie, that Gift movie from a couple years ago, also a Blumhouse production. So that's that.
Okay. And Luke Evans had a part in that, right?
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, Luke Evans. He sure did. He actually has a pretty big part in it. I'm not going to spoil much of anything, but because actually I didn't know he was in the movie because I don't think he was in many trailers, at least the one I saw from time to time. So I was surprised he was in it. But, yeah, he is absolutely in this movie, and he has a pretty sizable part too.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I saw a trailer for it, and then he popped up, and it's like just kind of shocked that he was playing, you know, kind of a backseat, you know, father figure in a small-time, you know, horror thriller movie. So I was pretty surprised by that.
Yeah, yeah, it caught me off guard as well. Directed by Tate Taylor, whose main claim to fame is another movie where he helmed Octavia Spencer, actually to an Oscar win in The Help. Very much a different movie. You know, leans, of course, heavily on the horror thriller. And it, for a first-time horror thriller director, he's pretty good. Like I said, I would have loved to see a little bit more pacing, and I do think that they left some ideas on the table as it pertains to, like, race and you know, an idea of, like, tokenism. There's something they could have led to, but they don't really hit on it a whole bunch. It's very much skimmed over. But overall, I liked it. You know, I'm not going to say it's amazing or anything, but I generally like these movies. I wasn't necessarily expecting any more than just a little bit of quick, if you want to use the word, trashy fun. And I got that for the most part. And I thought Octavia Spencer was really, really good.
All right. Sounds good. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into the top five.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Number five, we had Rocket Man with $14 million, and I don't think either of us have seen this, so we won't dive too deep into it. But it seems like it's getting pretty strong reviews, which I was not expecting based on the trailers. Have you been seeing the same thing?
Yeah, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's kind of – so one thing I have heard is I think it's a little bit more of an audience movie, very much – I've heard even the word musical a little bit. I was expecting a little bit more of like a biopic, but I think it might be leaning a little more towards a musical. I think audiences love it a lot more, at least some of the people I know who also – love to kind of talk about movies and, you know, even write about them, review them, you know, criticize them. I feel like they have a little more issues with the movie. I the one thing I've heard is that there are some things that maybe don't happen the way they exactly do in his life. And I think the thing they keep on referring back to is, like, based on a true fantasy. So obviously, you know, those kind of words are very much different from one another. So,
right.
You know, I have not gotten around to seeing this. I'd like to, I think, before it ends its theatrical run. But overall, I mean, it is at 90% of the Rotten Tomatoes. It's doing pretty good numbers at the box office in, you know, a year or a period typically for a blockbuster. So, you know, more power to it. I just haven't got around to checking it out.
All right, then. Well, and so Rocket Man came in number five. Number four, we've got Godzilla King of the Monsters in its second week with $15.5 million. We've both seen this, and I'll let you go first because you mentioned some not-so-positive feelings towards it.
Yeah, you know, I saw it last week. I saw it on a Sunday, and to be honest, I've already kind of forgot about a lot of it. You know, it follows 5 years after the Godzilla, and they talk very much about, you know, some of the stuff that happened in San Francisco. For me personally, I thought the first half of the movie was, you know, very kind of elongated. Didn't feel like there was a whole bunch going on. I'm surprised how much this movie, like, takes place in a war room, with other military people. And there's this whole kind of, I guess it's not a subplot, it's really central to the plot, with Vera Farmiga's character. She's trying to, it's been a week, but I've already forgot this movie. she's doing something to, like, try to, find Godzilla. Help me out here, because you just saw
Yeah, I mean, she thinks that, so there's essentially all these titans, which are, giant monsters scattered throughout the Earth. And it's her belief that if they're all released, there's going to be, like, a natural balance that is, placed back upon the world, whereas mankind, it's been, wrought with, war and pollution and destroying the planet. So she thinks there's going to be this equilibrium that goes back into place once all these monsters are released.
Yeah, that thanks for that.
That was my understanding of it.
Yeah, thanks for that. And, her character in particular, man, I just thought her logic wasn't there at all. That's all I'll say about that. But
I feel like I could have used, they give a little teeny bit on why she might be like that, but I mean, she was off her rocker. So I needed something, stronger behind why her character was so out there.
Yeah. I guess we don't really necessarily watch these movies for the humans. I know that was one issue a lot of people had with the 2014 movie, that the humans were pretty dull and we didn't get enough Godzilla. I actually liked the 2014 Godzilla. I thought when Godzilla made his appearance, like, it felt like a big deal. Whenever I think Gareth Edwards did the movie. Here we definitely get the monsters a lot earlier, but I feel like the direction itself, like, I like 70% of the time, I didn't really know exactly what was going on, and it's just so much was filmed in that dark blue, kind of grayish brown hue, and it almost felt like watching a Transformers movie past the first one, those ones that I feel like a lot of the bulk of people don't really like or care about. I definitely got that vibe a couple times, man. I guess I liked the last 30, 40 minutes, maybe more than the first, hour and 20 minutes of the movie, but it just felt very, very dull, a very dull watch. I didn't love the action. I thought it was okay, but I didn't love it. The humor, too, the times when they try to inject some humor. I like Bradley Whitford. He had me laughing a little bit, but they do kind of go to humor a little more than I was anticipating, and a lot of times, at least in the theater I was in, it just kind of failed really, really badly. So I wasn't high on the movie, if you guys can't tell. I thought it was a little more boring than what a Godzilla movie probably should be.
Yeah, so I came in with, relatively high expectations, similar to yourself. I liked the 2014 version a lot. I liked how, the monster was scarcely used, until, pretty much going into the end. And even at the end, there wasn't, that much shown of it, but kind of like a similar to Jaws type feel, which is one of my favorite movies. So I could appreciate, the kind of low keyness of it.
Right.
So my thoughts on this one, I think you hit it on the head with the kind of the big miss that the humor was. I just thought it was, pretty poorly written at a lot of different parts. And I thought some of the acting was, not that great. I did like Kyle Chandler. I'm a pretty big fan of his. So I thought he carried himself pretty well throughout the movie, along with Ken Watanabe. I could have used more Charles Dance, who was, kind of playing the main villain, along with Vera Farmiga to an extent.
Sure.
I don't know. I definitely enjoyed it more than you did. But looking back at it, I guess nothing really stands out as exceptional. I don't think it was as good as the first one. But I certainly appreciated some of the big spectacle fight scenes. I thought from a graphics perspective, it was pretty solid. And I thought, the King Ghidorah character was, pretty cool, like the giant three-headed monster. So I had no problem sitting through it. I don't think I would say I was, bored or not really entertained. But I think with these movies, one thing that they struggle from is when you try to force some sort of plot, which, honestly, the audience doesn't really need, just need like a vehicle to get things going. And then you can just have mindless action and it'll probably be fine. But I thought they might have tried to force it a little bit too much on us with some of the sub-character plots.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, like I said, the last 30 or 40 minutes for me, I probably liked it better than the first, you know, hour of the movie. I definitely feel like the first hour, at least for me, took some time to get going or, you know, hit on things that I, you know, didn't really care about or characters that, I don't know, I just felt like they kind of really didn't exist. But once, you know, I think they at some point get to Boston and then there's one other piece and they kind of have to revive someone. I found that to be, you know, pretty fun for the most part. So I didn't hate everything about the movie. I don't know if my interest is necessarily stoked to see another Godzilla movie ASAP. But then again, we're not necessarily getting a Godzilla movie. We're getting it pair up with Kong. And I actually like Skull Island. I thought it's kind of a different movie than Godzilla. Godzilla is, I don't want to say bleak, but Godzilla is very much a different looking movie than Kong Skull Island. Kong Skull Island was very bright, takes place in a jungle. Even just kind of humor wise, is a little different. And actually, again, I actually like Skull Island, so I'm interested to see. Off the top of head, do you know who's directing that movie?
Man, I do not. That's a great question, actually.
All right. I'm interested to see what that director does. I could probably pull it up right now, but you know, I think a happy medium maybe between the two would be best. I don't know exactly where it's going to be set, but I'm sure since it's going to come out next year, we'll probably start getting some images for it. So we'll see. I just have no real desire to see like another Godzilla focused movie, but if he's, you know, paired with King Kong or something, then you know, I'll still check it out.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be directed by Adam Wingard, okay, who is known for, looks like, a bunch of horror films. You're Next, VHS, The Guest, the newest Blair Witch movie.
Okay, all right, so this will probably be his first, like, big movie. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the director who just did this most recent Godzilla movie, I feel like he was known for, like, small-time horror films, and then he just got this, you know, big blockbuster out of the blue almost.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like I said, I don't know. I can't recall a whole bunch about this movie. I just saw it a week ago. But, man, who directed it?
It was Michael
Dougherty.
And he did, yeah, like Trick or Treat, Krampus.
Okay. Then we'll see if the other guy brings anything kind of new to the table here. But yeah, I don't really like this movie a whole bunch. I like the second half a little more better than the first half. But with that said, I don't really necessarily want to see another Godzilla movie immediately. But if he's paired with King Kong, I'll happily check that out and you know, see if it delivers on the Clash of the Titans. I don't think it's going to go exactly, you know, pitting them against each other, at least not for the bulk of the movie, but I'm sure we'll get one scene where, you know, they do kind of, you know, have that standoff, and it'll be kind of hopefully exactly what everyone's looking for, at least until we pivot to, like, a bigger threat or something.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, moving on to the number three spot, we've got Aladdin in its, let's see, third week, and it's already over $600 million worldwide, so another monster hit for Disney here. Number two, we've got Dark Phoenix, which brought in $33 million in its first weekend, and Mark, this is one that you saw, so I'll let you run with it from here.
Yeah, I saw Dark Phoenix today. It's the culmination of the X-Men movie, X-Men movies, at least under 20th Century Fox, and really the culmination of the arc that started back with First Class. And yeah, I mean, essentially it's kind of a reboot, a retelling of X-Men The Last Stand. That movie saw, you know, Jean Grey, I think, come in contact with some type of cosmic force, and this Jean Grey also comes in contact with a cosmic force, and, you know, she, her powers increase, her personality changes a little bit, and it's upon the X-Men to try to, you know, stop her while also saving her in the process. On Rotten Tomatoes, this thing has been getting, you know, tore apart by, I think, a lot of, you know, critics. I think even some fans aren't really high on it. But me, I saw it, and I don't mind it. You know, I there's some issues I definitely have with the movie, but I'm probably going to surprise some people here by saying this. It's probably my second favorite X-Men movie of, like, the four that have come out since First Class. I really, 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 really like First Class. But I'm one of those people, I'm in the minority on Days of Future Past. I like it, but I've always had issues sometimes with the rules of, like, time travel. And I feel like Days of Future Past really did screw up a lot of different things. I thought Apocalypse was fine. I put it on the same level of First Class. But there are some things I actually really, really like about Dark Phoenix. You know, directed by Simon Kinberg. He actually wrote, X-Men The Last Stand. But this is his first time directing any type of movie. And for the most part, I think he does a pretty sound job. There are some things about X-Men that feel pretty dated. Not just like the themes and the concepts, but like the visuals themselves at times. They do feel dated, but there are some cool action sequences too. One on a train, another one that starts at the start of the movie with them kind of going into space. I found myself like again very, very interested in those type of scenes. The music too, it felt kind of overbearing at times, but there's a really good score that I think I'm going to seek out on Spotify. But there are some issues, and I think the main thing is like it feels a little bit like The Hangover 3, and I'm going to elaborate a little bit, but you remember watching The Hangover 3, right?
God, unfortunately.
Yeah, so with those movies, you know, especially I think around the second one, but definitely for the third one, you can kind of see a lot of the main cast start to, you know, check out, and I think even if you listen to them on their press tours, they didn't really have a whole bunch to say. It was basically they were doing it for a paycheck. You do get that feeling sometimes watching some of the cast in Dark Phoenix. Some people are trying more than others. You know, Jennifer Lawrence, I think, has gone on record before. Like, she doesn't really like this Mystique role. You can tell she's just, like, phoning it in. And there are a couple characters or a couple actors, actresses like that in the movie who, you know this is the end, so they don't really give the best performances. So you get a lot of that. I think the main issue that I think some people have with the X-Men movies, and I know I've had them since First Class, is I think that there's just not enough connective tissue between each movie. With something like the Avengers or the MCU, you know, some of them do stand alone, but they do enough to always feel like it's progressing maybe to the next movie or to the next series of movies or something that's tangentially connected. From First Class to Dark Phoenix, I don't really feel like there's anything that's kind of connecting any of them at all. I guess the strongest one would be First Class to Days of Future Past. But as we saw, Days of Future Past kind of undid a lot of the X-Men history before it. And by consequence, you know, it kind of undoes any type of stakes that could be had or maybe should have been had. I don't know if you remember Apocalypse, but the credit scene at the end indicated something like a thing about Essex, and that's not seen here.
Right.
Again, yeah, there's nothing that I feel like really connects these movies at all. So when they try to go for like emotional moments, for example, they don't really hit as much as they could, as opposed to if you're again making the comparison to the Avengers or, you know, Marvel. We spent a lot of time with these movies and they've done a whole bunch of work in, you know, making sure that there are at least some ties to each other in one way, shape, or form. So when they are going for something that could, you know, tug at the heartstrings, they generally do a good job at hitting that. Here, there are a couple of moments in these movies and they just feel kind of half-baked in Dark Phoenix just because, you know, so much rewrites and so many of the history and kind of the lore have been retconned. So there's really like no reason, I guess, to kind of feel some of those emotional moments. That's really my biggest issue, I think, with Dark Phoenix and these X-Men movies as a whole since Days of Future Past or since First Class. They've done some interesting things from time to time. They've gotten right on casting James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender in particular, but they never really have felt like that connected to each other. And as a consequence, like, there's really no reason, I guess, to feel invested. And this is the last one, so I believe that they're going to, if anything happens in the future, Marvel and the MCU is probably going to bring them in some way, shape, or form.
So one of my favorite part of, I think, this entire, you know, kind of like reboot of sorts was the Fassbender casting as Magneto.
He's amazing here. He still is probably the best part of the movie.
That was my question.
I wouldn't say he's in it for long. I'm not going to spoil anything, but just to give you a little bit of a taste of what a screen time looks like, he probably appears more towards like the second half of the movie, maybe the second latter half of the movie. So you're not getting a ton of him, but he's in the movie. He does have things to do. He's got a really, really cool action sequence. But yeah, he's easily the best part of the movie. James McAvoy at times, he's been strong in these movies before, but here his performance feels kind of, I don't know, soap opera-y. That's the thing I want to get to. It's very melodramatic at times, Dark Phoenix, and not in a good way. And I think it just comes back again, not everything, you know, really building upon each other. His character in particular undergoes a little bit of a change that feels very rushed and feels very haphazard. They kind of position him as a little bit of a villain where we kind of never saw any of those aspects of his character before. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always loved about some of the Marvel movies, especially once we kind of got to Civil War, was they had laid the background for that years before, especially in like the first Avengers where, you know, you see the differing ideologies Iron Man and Captain America have, and then you kind of see that a little more in Age of Ultron, and then you finally get in Civil War. But they built to that moment. Here, there was never anything in the past that kind of indicated that Charles maybe was this egotistical kind of manipulative person, but we get a lot of that in this movie. And again, it just felt kind of out of place for the Charles Xavier that we saw the movies before.
It's kind of a shame, especially in, you know, what very well could be his last time in the role, to give him that kind of a turn, almost like a heel of sorts.
Mm-hmm. It was very surprising. You know, I liked the movie, or I like some parts of the movie for sure. And it's, I personally think it's as bad as a lot of the reviews have made it out to be. And I think I said at the start, it's probably my second favorite movie of the four after Days of Future Past, First Class. Mm-hmm. If you told me I had to buy a Blu-ray of one of those three movies and I had to watch it, you know, X amount of times, I'd actually buy this movie.
Really?
Yeah. And again, the more I kind of think about Days of Future Past, I'm probably a minority, but I don't know if I care much for that movie. And Apocalypse, I put it on the same level as Days of Future Past. There's some things I liked about it, but I've kind of forgot about that movie too. There's some things, again, I kind of was surprised at how much I like this movie, but I still say that it's much closer to average than it is good, but there are some highs that I found myself surprised with, and maybe it's just because my expectations were semi-low, but I could see myself maybe rewatching this movie months down the line on like HBO or something like that, whereas I wouldn't be upset if I never could see Days of Future Past or Apocalypse again.
Man, you are down on Days of Future Past.
I am. I think it's, you know, we talked a little bit about it on the podcast before we went in depth into the Avengers Endgame. And, you know, everyone at this point knows about all the time travel and stuff. That was the part of the movie that I just kind of did not like much at all. There's some good moments out of it for sure, but I think that's probably more of like a personal thing for me, whereas I'm finding I like sci-fi stuff. Time travel, though, I always feel like the rules have been, you know, very, very loose, and when I want to know a little more, it's like you can make up the rules on the fly, and then you can, you know, rewrite everything, and there not really be clear consequences. So that's why I've always, maybe I just have like a slight inherent bias of like time travel, you know, action movies. They're not my preferred cup of tea. So maybe that's why I'm not really high on Days of Future Past. But yeah.
Yeah. And I'll be the first person to say that my liking of Days of Future Past is probably slightly biased because mm-hmm. they brought Hugh Jackman back into the fold as kind of the central character. And I mean, he's hands down my favorite part of, you know, anything X-Men related. So
sure.
As soon as I saw that he was going to be, you know, alongside Michael Fassbender's Magneto, which is probably my second favorite character of the entire franchise, I was all in at that point.
Yeah.
But, hey, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of relieved to hear that you liked it. Cause I think you and I do align on a lot of our tastes in a, you know, pretty similar fashion. So I'm not going to go out of my way to see Dark Phoenix as soon as it's available for, you know, renting or streaming. Before I talked to you, I was kind of out on it, like, nah, I don't really care. But man, I'll definitely give it a watch now.
I would be very curious to hear your thoughts for sure. Like I said, there's actually some things that I was surprised with that I liked more than I thought I would. I don't think it's an amazing movie by any stretch of the imagination, but the things I had been hearing before I went into the movie, like, you know, this is the worst X-Men movie, I'd rather watch The Last Stand or X-Men Origins, I definitely don't feel that to be the case. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I'm sure a lot of people would be excited to hear that as well. All right, and so the number one spot of the weekend was The Secret Life of Pets 2, which brought in $47.1 million. And I didn't see this, but I will say that I was pretty shocked to see that it handily beat Dark Phoenix. And that was just kind of a bummer for me, man, that the X-Men franchise would, you know, this portion of it would wrap up on such a low note.
Yeah, you know, I think the bad, generally bad reviews, pan reviews, even in some cases, killed Dark Phoenix on impact. I was surprised. Typically, sometimes I'll get like screenings for these movies, and I didn't get any screening whatsoever for Dark Phoenix. So the closer we got to it, I was like, that's probably not a good sign. So I'm not necessarily surprised that The Secret Life of Pets 2 beat Dark Phoenix, but handily, like you said, over 14 million. That was quite the shock. I thought at least they would have been, you know, close in some way, shape, or form. But you know, the reviews definitely did Dark Phoenix in, and you know, The Secret Life of Pets 2 doesn't have any amazing reviews either. I think it's right around 55% right now on Rotten Tomatoes, and the thing I've heard is it's really just like a loose collection of sketches that doesn't really have like a sound plot. I'll be honest, I'll be completely transparent. I still have not seen the first Secret Life of Pets, so I don't know exactly what I'm missing. But I know that generally the animation looks kind of cute, and since we're in the summer now, families who maybe already got to Aladdin need something else to take to the family,
right,
the family too. So I think this is the movie, at least for a couple of weeks, maybe even until Lion King, to be honest.
Could be. It might put up some surprisingly large numbers. I think the biggest thing that I saw about this was that they, you know, they replaced Louis C.K. with Patton Oswalt, I believe, and obviously they had to do that for a children's movie. But other than that, I didn't see a lot of buzz around it.
I didn't either. Maybe I spoke a little too soon about, you know, this being one of the only anime movies in town for, what's his name, The Lion King. But Toy Story 4 is coming out in a couple weeks.
Ooh,
I guess that
geez.
Could probably do some big numbers too. And early buzz is it's like it's really, really good. So I'm guessing that will probably be the next movie that families will flock en masse to. I can see that kind of, I don't want to say, maybe even, yeah, in some ways ruling the box office until we get to Spider-Man at the turn of July. So, yeah, I totally forgot about Toy Story 4, but that's probably the next big semi-bankable movie that's on the docket.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be the next weekend where I've got any real interest in the box office, just with that as well as Child's Play coming out. But not to get too far ahead of ourselves. But
right.
But yeah, at any rate, that'll wrap up the weekend box office recap. And with that, I think we can move into just a real quick preview of what's coming out this upcoming weekend. Two major ones, or at least two main ones, I guess I would say. But one is Men in Black International, and the other one is Shaft. And honestly, this might be kind of a pass for a weekend. I'll go see one of these movies if I need to, but I wouldn't say I'm overly excited for either of them.
Yeah.
You know, Men in Black, it just, I didn't need another movie. I certainly didn't need another one without Will Smith in it. I do love Hemsworth, and I would say he's been unfortunate at the box office outside of Avengers. So I really want him to have a hit. I like Tessa Thompson a lot as well. I'm kind of interested to see them together. You've got Emma Thompson and Liam Neeson in kind of like their, you know, like the Men in Black, you know, senior roles. So while I like the cast, the trailers just, they don't look very interesting to me.
Yeah, they do look very bland. I am almost certainly going to pass on this one. I do think that you know, Hemsworth and Thompson have pretty good chemistry. Obviously, we saw that in Ragnarok. It's a movie I don't love, but I do like their dynamic for sure in it. So, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing really eye-catching about anything, in my opinion, at least, that's going on with this movie. I'll be interested to see what their views look like, but there's nothing that really had me chuckling at all in the trailer. So I'm going to pass on that movie. I'm actually going to go see Shaft. I've got a screening to go to on Monday for that.
Nice.
I wrote a post on That Moment In just about Shaft 2000 because, you know, I'd never actually seen Shaft 2000. I had seen the 71 version.
That came out in 2000?
Came out in 2000, and we're getting a sequel almost 20 years later.
Oh, my God.
A rebooted sequel of sorts. But the Shaft 2000 also did the same thing for 1971. But, yeah, after seeing 2000, it's definitely, in my opinion, not an IP that needed any reboot. But I think they're going to lean a little bit more towards the comedy in this one and maybe a little more action. The Shaft movie that I saw in 2000 had some issues with kind of just balancing those different aspects. There wasn't enough action for me. It was kind of comedic at times, but they still wanted to be a little gritty, and I never really felt like they nailed either aspect of it as in whole. I was surprised, though. You got Christian Bale, Jeffrey Wright, Toni Collette, as well as Elizabeth Banks, who's in the movie for like 2 minutes at the start of it. But yeah, very surprised to see some of those actors now and actresses who we regard as kind of like some of the best at their craft in this movie in the year 2000, Y2K. I haven't really seen any trailers for Shaft, just kind of TV spots. Maybe it'll surprise me a little bit. I don't have super high expectations for it, but I will be checking out tomorrow, and I almost certainly will be getting a post out to That Moment In in the coming days afterwards.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big Samuel L. Jackson fan, so while I hope that it's a good movie and it does well, it's just not one that I've got a ton of interest in. So
yeah,
I'll be curious to read your thoughts.
I'll deliver them right to you, John.
Any other ones that you wanted to touch on getting released this week?
No, I think those are the really big ones. There's a movie called The Dead Don't Die. I've seen actually that trailer a lot more than I thought I did, but I've seen it quite a few times now. I believe that Vern is going to be covering that. It's kind of like a horror comedy in the vein, I think, of Shaun of the Dead, except it's not British.
It's got a good cast.
It does have a good cast, yeah. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, and Danny Glover, along with Steve Buscemi. I think it's the director's debut, if I want to say it. Could be wrong, Jim Jarmusch. But yeah, I've seen the trailers. It looks a little interesting, but I kind of want to see what Vern says about it first before I maybe set up some time to check out. But that's the only kind of other movie. Everything else, you know, is in Shaft, Men in Black. I guess Late Night's coming out, kind of a comedy with what's her name? She was in The Office.
Mindy Kaling.
Mandy Kaling, and I think Emma Thompson. I've heard a little bit of, like, you know, kind of sweet chemistry between the two, but that's really about it.
Yeah, not a ton, but yeah. Then the rest of the month, will like you mentioned, you know, Toy Story will probably dominate for a while. But yeah, I guess with that, Mark, is there anything else you wanted to touch on this week?
I don't think so, man. Yeah, you guys can expect a post from me regarding 2019 Shaft over the next couple days. At some point, we will get back to what did we even name that segment where you ask me or I ask you about certain kind of things about, you know, movies or our history, etc.
I don't think we did, but we definitely need to name it.
Okay, we will name it. Hopefully we can come up with something for the next time. I think I had an interesting name for it, but it slipped my mind now, so I think I'll have to try to generate something new. But we'll get back to that at some point. Once we, I think, start getting into a consistent schedule again, we definitely haven't forgot about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, I think we should be back, you know, next weekend, short of any unforeseen circumstances. So, yeah, I think we should be good to get the podcast back on track.
Awesome. But, yeah, that's about it for me. staff's on my docket, and I'm sure we'll have a little bit of talk about that, and hopefully we'll have some news, or, you know, at least some tangential things we can get to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that'll be it for this week of Cinema Recap, but thank you very much for tuning in.
All right, guys, thanks for listening as always.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.